Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, May 17th. Hope your day's starting off well. I was reaching into a mesh bag of apples this morning to tear open the mesh, and I ripped off part of my thumbnail. So, you know, things have to go up from here, right? But as they say, if God hands you lemons, make lemonade. Speaking of lemonade, we're going to be talking about Beyoncé's new album, All the Buzz, with its themes of forgiveness, betrayal, redemption, all the rest, of course, packaged in something that from the outside I would not necessarily look distinctly Christian, but there are definitely profound religious overtones in the work. Not that I would know, being a classic country guy, not typically a big Beyoncé listener, but my guest in the second hour, Alyssa Wilkinson, who is a professor and a film critic. We've had her on before to talk about so-called Christian movies and the problems with some of them and how oftentimes you can find the faith perhaps in less outwardly pious packages. So Alyssa Wilkinson will be on in the second hour to talk about Beyoncé's newest really visual album called Lemonade, which evidently is really rooted around that idea of life hands you lemons, make lemonade. Of course, I've also heard it said, if life doesn't also hand you some sugar and some water, your lemonade's going to suck. But anyway, 573-4BRID-4, if you want to be on the program today, 573-4BRID-4, you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. So that'll be half of our second hour, that conversation with Alyssa Wilkinson. We'll also talk about her new book about how to survive the apocalypse, which should be an interesting conversation for sure. Alyssa, I think, is a very creative thinker, which I appreciate, writes for Christianity Today and Rolling Stone. Anybody who can pull off that duo, it's pretty impressive. Anyway, we'll also talk about why Facebook has a right to be biased. That's been sort of in the news. And our question of the day will have to do with Facebook, but you'll have to wait till the next segment to get that one. Also, sifting through the SCOTUS ruling, the Supreme Court of the United States, with a ruling of sorts about the Little Sisters of the Poor case. And it's being spun on both sides as a win. So we'll try to sift through that a little bit. And then also, a sad article about the demise of the friendship between J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. If you want to be a part of the program, as I said, you can call anytime. 573-4BRID-4 is the number to call or text. 573-4BRID-4. Or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, be a part of things. It's kind of raining here, not sure what it's doing there. That's why yesterday I got out to, again, Operation Project, get the house ready for people to come into it on graduation, continued yesterday. Took a half a vacation day and got out into the yard, particularly because I knew, according to the forecast, rain was coming today. It's been, gosh, one of the rainiest Mays I can remember, but someone told me that April was relatively dry, so I guess it all balances out. Besides, we'll be complaining about the dryness and the heat soon enough, you know, us people. We can't ever be satisfied. But it is raining today, but was able to get out yesterday and get a little yard work done until my son surprised me at 5 o'clock. I was out trying to trim branches off of a tree and rake up the pieces into our little rolling lawn waste bin. And my son pops out the door. Dad, I've got a band concert tonight. Well, thanks for the heads up, son. Oh, we're supposed to bring salad. So anyway, about 3 hours of my night cut out, but it was good. It was a nice concert. And, you know, my son, who's a freshman, he'll be a senior probably before I know it, so I need to enjoy these. Looking at the readings for today here on this second day after the Feast of Pentecost and the gift of the Holy Spirit. As I said yesterday, we have now shifted away from the book of Acts in our first readings, which really dominated through the 50 days of the Easter season. But we're continuing in the New Testament in our first readings, and we've gone to the epistle to the James. James is a book that's often called the Proverbs of the New Testament because of its practicality. yesterday we talked about the twin virtues of humility and wisdom. Because the essence of the letter of James is how Christian disciples really are to live in the world, how to live out their faith. And James sets the tone fairly early when he talks about faith without works and how faith without works is dead. And you might say personal piety without outward virtue is dead as well. You can be thoroughly orthodox in your beliefs and be a jerk. We've all known those people. Maybe we've all even been those people. And James, the book of the letter to James, a helpful reminder to us that so much of the Christian life is about how we live and love in the world. I talked about this a little bit last week. For some reason, and we all go through, we have different stages and phases where things appeal to us more than they do at other times and so forth. And how I, you know, had come across a show that I like a lot. It's a show about Catholic apologetics. We say apologetics, we don't mean saying we're sorry for things, though we Catholics believe in doing that. But when I say apologetics, it's about giving a defense for the faith or explaining the Catholic faith. And given that a significant aspect of my own journey to the Catholic faith from being a Methodist Christian and Methodist pastor was an intellectual journey, at least it began that way. Therefore, I, for a long time, really found apologetics to be very appealing to me. Understanding the faith, partly because of the beauty that I found in the integration of the Catholic faith and how comprehensive it is, how interwoven and connected, and there's a great panoramic beauty of truth. I've equated it before to, you know, when you're driving around a mountain in a road that curls around that incline, that gradual, steady ascent. And as you're driving around that mountain road, perhaps you're seeing, as you're getting higher, you can see through the cracks on the trees on the side, between the trees on the side of the road, that must be a beautiful view below. That was kind of the early part of my journey to the Catholic faith, was seeing those little cracks and glimpses of Catholic truth and being surprised by them, having these epiphanies, these aha moments. Ah, oh, that's why Catholics believe that. Or that's the scriptural passage that Catholic belief is based on. Us. Oh, or really, Catholics don't believe this? I always thought they did. They actually believe that? But you can't really see the big picture until you finally come around the bend and then you see there's a scenic overlook where things spread out. You pull your car in, the trees break open, and you can see the vista below. For me, that was really in the season, almost moment in my life when I saw all those little snippets of truth coalesce into the beautiful integrated truth of the faith. And so apologetics for me, explaining and helping people overcome their misconceptions and seeing how truth is interwoven, is a powerful thing. But for some reason, when I heard this apologetics show, it didn't hold the same appeal to me. Maybe it's the season in my life I'm going through. Maybe it's because I've come to recognize, even in my own life, that right belief is a great thing, but it's not the fullness of the Christian faith. It's possible to be in love with the idea of God and yet be strangely distant from God Himself. And it's possible to believe all the right things and yet still not live a life of love. And so the book of James, the epistle of James, a great corrective. And he deals in James chapter 4, "Beloved, where do the wars and where do the conflicts among you come from? Is it not from your passions that make war within your members? You covet, but do not possess. You kill and envy, but you cannot obtain. You fight and wage war. You do not possess because you do not ask. You ask but do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. Adulterers." James not mincing any words there. Now, I don't expect that James is actually writing to people who are starting literal wars, throwing on their armor, putting on their, ironclad war costume and riding cavalry horses out into the open field. But he is talking about how hard it is sometimes for people to get along. And one of the reasons it's hard for people to get along is because not only are we at war outside ourselves, we're at war within ourselves. We'll get more into this in the next hour, because I think this reading in James today, really a challenge to us in that process of that interior integration of our faith, living it out in the reality of daily life and those we live with. How not to be a jerk, basically, which I'll be honest with you, sometimes I can be. And it's one of those things where the longer I'm a Christian, the more I realize I've got a long way to go. But the good news is that God's grace doesn't fail us. And I said, as I've said before, he's in it for the whole project. He really wants to make us not holy. I mean, he wants to make us holy. He wants to help us to love, not in just some sort of pious fiction that what Christ has is ours. But he really wants to change us, and he will if we'll get out of the way and let him. We'll be back in just a minute with the question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, May 17th. If you wake up, you may want to go ahead and say good morning on Facebook, unless other people find that status annoying. I'm going to be talking about Facebook a little bit later, and particularly the question of does Facebook have a right to be biased? There's been a little bit of controversy over a former Facebook staffer saying that in their trending line that certain media stories were suppressed with had more of a conservative angle and others were highlighted. And people accusing Facebook of sort of manipulating the narrative. And we'll get into that a little bit and why I happen to agree with the point that Facebook has every right to be biased. And if you're truly a conservative, you should believe that as well. But anyway, but I'm asking a Facebook-related question for the question of the day. And that is, what do you find to be the most annoying type of Facebook status? 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to call or text 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. And I posted a reference, a little meme, on the question of the day on the show's Facebook page. That is an example of the kind that I don't like. And there are numerous Facebook statuses, is that what you call it? That I'm not crazy about. But this one, this meme says, if you don't want to talk about it, don't post vague status updates on Facebook, fishing for people to ask you what's wrong. Yeah, I have to say that is one Facebook status that drives me crazy, is the statement in which you are apparently frustrated or discouraged or depressed about something, and you make that clear, but you leave everybody hanging over what it is. You know, maybe you put something like, I can't even, ... And that's all. Those kind of Facebook statuses, those are really frustrating. And then people start to ask questions, almost like an investigative reporter, to see if they can find out what's wrong, which I guess is what the original poster wanted in the first place. But what are some for you that break Facebook etiquette, let's say, or drive you a little bit crazy? Is it food pictures? Is it political posts? Is it let's see who reads my wall posts? Is it people who share just about any story without checking its veracity first? All those kind of questions. Would love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We should be able, you know, as with any new frontier, we have to figure out the rules as we go along, and we'll see. All right, so a big opening game last night for the Thunder Warriors series, the Western Conference Finals. And the Thunder seriously finding their mojo last night and winning in Golden State 108-102 with a big game one victory. Man, are the Thunder, they've already spoiled the party in terms of everyone's anticipated Spurs Warriors Western Conference Finals. Now they could upset the apple cart all the way and knock out the Golden State Warriors from reaching their seemingly consummating destiny. Keith, who is screening calls, who has made no secret of his disdain for the Warriors, just sent me a Skype message that says, I love it. I mean, honestly, Westbrook and Durant, that it's good. Kevin Durant, if he wins an NBA title with the Thunder, it's going to be kind of hard for him to leave. Maybe not. But Westbrook and Durant, I didn't get to see the game last night. Obviously, up way too late. It would be making me up way too late for my radio show, Beauty Rest. But checking out the scores here on ESPN.com, pretty impressive opening win for the Thunder. And now you have Golden State facing, wow, a back-against-the-wall must-win. Who would have thought Golden State would be in a position to face a back-against-the-wall must-win? But they're facing one now. So we'll see that unfold. See another article here about Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, sorry effort, another red flag. This is from realclearsports.com. Guess he had an exhibition yesterday in which he put some balls into the water. As it says here in the Washington Post, he hadn't so much as taken a practice swing when he grabbed a wedge and stood on the 10th tee at Congressional Country Club. Not a cloud in the sky on a crisp Monday morning for a man who has had his every move scrutinized since he was a teenager. Here was Tiger Woods, asked to hit a golf ball over a pond and onto a green, the pin 102 yards away, a few dozen eyes upon him. He took the club back, made a pass through the ball, stood straight as he stared it down, allowed the club to slide through his hands, and watched the ball splash. Oh, that was stiff, he said. Ugh. He put down another ball, and into the drink it went. A third off the bank and in again. Folks, this is a 102-yard hole in an exhibition. As it says, that was enough for Woods on Monday when he appeared at Congressional to remind people that his tournament, the Quicken Loans National, will go off here next month, whether he plays in it or not. He also provided the latest opportunity to assign meaning to events that may or may not warrant such weight. Three wedges in the water, that means he's done, right? I get asked that a lot, where people say, it's great seeing you. I thought you were dead, Woods said. No, I'm right here in front of you. People have ridden me off. I'm not fertilizer. As far as my golf, I'm progressing. I'm getting better. Just give it a little time. Well, I mean, Tiger is 40 now, and he's had several surgeries, including this recent back surgery. His world ranking currently 524th, just behind Dan Huizing of the Netherlands, still ahead of Jack Senior of England. As I said before, back when I was rooting actively against Tiger to pass Jack Nicklaus's record, being the Jack fan that I am, I don't think I ever rooted that this would happen to the guy. Kind of feeling for him a little bit. He certainly continues to think, though, that Jack Nicklaus's major championship record is still attainable, as well as Sam Snead's record 82 PGA Tour victories. He said, I'm number two on both lists. It'd be nice to end up number one on both lists. Another great article on ESPN.com tells the story of Marcus Lattimore. I'm going to post a link to this on the show's Facebook page. Marcus Lattimore, who was the next big thing as a running back for South Carolina. I remember him because South Carolina plays in the same conference as my own Kentucky Wildcats. And when Marcus Lattimore was running roughshod over the Southeastern Conference, looking like the next Emmitt Smith or Herschel Walker, then it had two devastating knee injuries within the span of a couple of years. I remember the second one, watching it on TV, one of those gruesome things that, like a train wreck, you can't help but watch and then you turn your head away from. But a fascinating story about Marcus Lattimore. Talking about, as we'll talk about next hour, with Beyonce's new visual album called Lemonade. Talk about a guy who has overcome disappointment and found joy in where he is now. Remarkable quote toward the beginning of this article about Marcus Lattimore is that he says he wouldn't change. He says he looks upon the injuries that he sustained that ended his career. He's probably the most talented guy to never play a down in the NFL. He says this about his injuries. Life is a little bit more enjoyable now because of what I've been through. I wouldn't change a thing that happened. Put those knee injuries back in my life. I'm such a better person overall. I'm wiser and I'm grateful for every single day that I can get out of bed and I can walk and I can run if I want to. The little things, they matter a little bit more than they did in the past. He started a foundation that helps others who have experienced injuries, devastating injuries as athletes, and can't afford treatment. Started a foundation with pretty meager amount, but it's growing. Kudos to Marcus Lattimore for living out that role of the wounded healer who takes the pain of his own scars and, by God's grace, brings healing to the lives of others. All right, so let's move on to our What Were You Thinking Awards of the Day. So we're going to span the globe. We're going to start actually down not far from where my daughter lives, Garner, North Carolina. Listen, I know how frustrating it is to get stopped by a train, okay? They always seem to come rumbling down the tracks when you're in a hurry to get somewhere. Well, according to this story, this is from last Sunday, a speeding Amtrak train hit a car stuck on the tracks in Wake County Sunday morning, and it's not the first time this driver escaped with her life. The crash happened shortly before 11 a.m. Witnesses told authorities a woman's vehicle appeared to be stuck on the tracks after running through a crossing arm, despite it being in the down position with warning lights and bells activated. Believe me, I've thought about this before. You think, oh, well, they put that warning arm down way earlier than they need to. I can probably still get around it and over the tracks. Well, this woman tried this and got stuck on the track. She was able to get away from the car, evidently, before it was hit by the train. But the thing that's the kicker, it's the second time she's done it here in the last couple of weeks. You would think, you know, fool me once, shame on me, okay? So, or shame on you, but oh my goodness. Follow the railroad crossing advisory. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. Welcome back, friend, to the Mike Allen Show here at the bottom of the hour on this Tuesday, May 17th. Just a little over halfway through the month. Big month, busy month, isn't it? First communions, sometimes confirmation. You got the graduations, both from college, high school, middle school, all the rest thrown in there. Lots to do. And my friend Jason Hall, keep he and his fiancée, Jessica, in your prayers this Saturday. Jason, who's a regular guest on the program, Jason will be entering into the married life at the ripe old age of 38. So congratulations to Jason and Jessica. And We'll hopefully get him sometime on the show for a post-wedding edition and find out how he's doing. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to chime in on our question of the day, which is, what do you find to be a particularly annoying Facebook status? Is it somebody's exercise update? Is it a brazenly political post? Is it somebody vaguely calling somebody else out so that no one knows who they're talking about or what they're talking about? Is it food photos? Is it the TMI post? What is it? 573-4BREAD-4. Call or text. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Casey responds on Facebook. New question of the day. Types of status count? Just kidding. All caps, he says. Come on, Casey. You know there's a little truth in every joke. So, but I'll be okay. 573-4BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We can have some fun with this today. My guest next hour, as I said, Alyssa Wilkinson, a professor of English literature and a film critic. Alyssa Wilkinson will talk some about her new book, How to Survive the Apocalypse, as well as a column that she wrote in Christianity Today on what she called Bey and Bey's God, about Beyonce's new visual album, Lemonade, that stirred a lot of conversation. And she looks at it from the perspective of the Catholic faith or Christian faith and the signs of Beyonce's faith and her theology, even in the midst of this album, which evidently is all about betrayal and forgiveness and resurrection and all the rest. So Alyssa Wilkinson in the next hour. Let's get back to our What Were You Thinking nominees for the day. Our first one, of course, was the woman who two different times drove around a railroad crossing arm with the lights flashing, and both times was fortunate to escape with her life. I wouldn't push your luck, lady. Our second nominee, two people hurt here, it says, in accidental shooting at Kansas graduation ceremony. As I've said before, I'm a Second Amendment guy, but sometimes things are a little crazy. Two people hurt in an accidental shooting at Augusta High School's graduation. Augusta Police Chief Tyler Brewer said Sunday afternoon the shooting was accidental and described it as a, quote, knucklehead situation, which makes it a perfect candidate for the What Were You Thinking segment. We're all about knucklehead situations. Evidently, the shooting happened as people were filing into the football stadium for the graduation. A man's concealed gun accidentally discharged when he was sitting in the bleachers of Hillier Stadium. Police said the bullet from the gun hit the man. Then the bullet or shrapnel ricocheted about 50 feet and hit a woman who's standing near the press box. Police said the gun owner has a permit, was carrying a small semi-automatic gun in his sock. The gun in his sock was uncomfortable, and he was apparently adjusting it when it went off. Oh, my goodness. What was his name? Bernard P. Fife. The man was reported to have accidentally shot himself in the right foot and was able to drive himself to the hospital. You're carrying your gun in your sock? Anyway. So, you know, concealed and carry, not always the answer. But the winner, and I typically have a policy on the What Were You Thinking segment, not to give the award when people die because of it. You know, the so-called Darwin Awards, we don't go there. But I guess we'll make an exception for animals. Anyway, you may have heard the story. There have been visitors in Yellowstone recently who have engaged in inappropriate, dangerous, and illegal behavior with wildlife. Last week, there were visitors, if you saw the story, who saw a newborn bison calf who seemed to be cold. And they felt sorry for it and decided that they would transport it to the park facility because of their concern for its welfare. They picked up the bison calf and put it in the back of their vehicle and drove it to the ranger station, I guess. Again, that's dangerous enough. You don't want an angry threatened Mama Bison, for one thing. But they got out of that okay. But evidently, they didn't realize that interference by people can cause bison mothers to reject their offspring. And when the park rangers tried to reunite the newborn bison calf with the herd, the efforts failed. The bison calf was later euthanized because it was abandoned and causing a dangerous situation by continually approaching people in cars along the roadway. So keep that in mind next time you pass a bison. If it looks cold, it is kind of equipped to deal with that. Anyway, so that's our winner. Sad story, really. 573-4BREAD-4, if you've got your own to nominate, love to hear from you, even if it's one from your own life. Those are sometimes the best ones indeed. A big day here in the state of Kentucky, the Democratic primary. Not sure if there's any primaries happening anywhere else. The Republicans moved up their caucus, so they don't have a primary the same day to March, all done for Rand Paul, who, if you'll recall, was once a candidate for the GOP nomination. They moved the caucus up to March, I guess, to try to give him a better chance. But I think he maybe even dropped out before the caucus. So the Democrats voting today, I would say Hillary Clinton will win that one going away. I think she's fairly popular among Democrats in this state, unlike maybe the way she's viewed in West Virginia. But I could be wrong. So we'll see how that plays out. It still seems like Bernie's just hanging around for not much of a reason at all, though maybe his agenda, his political agenda, will have some influence on the Clinton campaign. I don't know, but that's going on today. Other political news actually has to do with Facebook. There was a story reported by Gizmodo recently that Facebook's editorial staff is biased. I know that's not exactly shocking. According to this piece from theglobeandmail.com, Gizmodo's report this week that Facebook's news curators had allegedly censored conservative news sources from appearing in the trending news box. If you'll look at your Facebook page over on the right, you'll see a trending column with various stories, I guess, that are being viewed. And many conservatives now are expressing their displeasure as what they see as censorship, because more perhaps liberal-leaning stories were emphasized and more conservative ones were de-emphasized. In fact, Reince Priebus, chairman of the Republican National Committee, has demanded that Facebook respond to the allegations. As this story says, this commentary from Jaron Kerr, who is managing editor of The Varsity newspaper at the University of Toronto, says this right-wing fury is misplaced and unjustified. The faux outrage brings up some interesting points about both Facebook and journalism. Kerr says the first is that people are applying standards expected of publishers on Facebook, which is only a platform where publishers exist. Facebook is in no way obligated, ethically or otherwise, to be neutral, whatever that means, and which stories it highlights. Its status as an internet behemoth does not change the fact that it is a company with the freedom to promote whatever it pleases. Chairman Mark Zuckerberg seems to be fairly liberal, and it makes sense he would encourage his site to feature stories that align with his values. Facebook is a public company, Kerr says, but Mr. Zuckerberg has extensive control over its operations. If he wants to highlight liberal news, it's his right. Surely any advocate of free enterprise would agree. And I have to say, even though, you know, I tend to be conservative on some things, I would agree with this, with Mr. Kerr here. Facebook does not have any obligation. I enjoy Facebook, but I don't in any way expect that it's going to necessarily align with my values. I'll say this about Facebook is, as I said, I post things at times that make certain liberals would make their heads explode, for sure. I've never been censored that I know of on Facebook. I've never been told I can't publish anything. I've engaged in conversations. As I said, I enjoy Facebook for the most part, annoying status updates notwithstanding. And I enjoy it as a public forum in order to be able, as an issue, to be able to discuss different points of view and so forth. Now, here's where I think conservatives have to be consistent, because in the same way that we've seen the Supreme Court decision as regarding corporations as person, as a true, as a justified decision. In other words, just because people incorporate together, and just because that corporate entity becomes huge, it doesn't change the fact that persons who incorporate continue to have constitutional rights. And so in that sense, corporations are persons. You can't say that on the one hand and then say that Facebook doesn't have a constitutional right to promote its own particular political agenda. If you don't like it, get off Facebook. That's the only way to challenge and or to prevent what's happening from what's happening. So knock yourselves out, Facebook. You've got every right to do it, in my opinion. We'll be back with more. This is The Mike Allen Show. Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Happy birthday to Jordan Knight, part of one of the earliest boy bands, New Kids on the Block. I'm going to have to give Jennifer here at the radio station, Jennifer Longworth, if you know her, hard time, because I know back in the day she was quite the New Kids on the Block fan. But I guess when Jordan Knight gets his ARP card, which is only a few years away, maybe take time to take down those New Kids posters. Just saying. We'll get in just a minute to some other things that happened on this day throughout history besides Jordan Knight's birth. Just a reminder of our question today related to Facebook. What do you find to be an annoying Facebook status, a type of status? Not anybody specifically. No need to call someone out. But, you know, there is a certain etiquette on Facebook. And but people find different things annoying. What is it that gets to you? 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. I think we had one comment of Curtis, who said people who post very, very partisan stories that politically that they don't really bother to check out. What really gets me is when people share an Onion article, which is a parody website, and they assume that the article is actually real. Here we go. Curtis says, any political posts that are clearly full of half-truths are annoying. That probably eliminates most political posts on Facebook, to be honest with you. Anyway, what are some other things on this day, May 17th, throughout
Where
the ages,
are we, dude?
That have happened?
These are the circuits of history, gentlemen. They'll take us to any point in time we wish.
Who are we?
Gentlemen, we're history.
Don't know much about history.
On this day, 480 years ago, 1536, Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn's marriage was annulled, declared null. Done, of course, by the Church of England that had broken away from Rome and the Catholic Church, what is sometimes called the British Reformation or the British Revolt. Though I'll say on this instance, I agree. Henry VIII's marriage to Anne Boleyn was, in fact, null and void because he was still married to Catherine of Aragon. Now, for Catherine of Aragon, she had it bad enough. She simply got put out of Henry's house. Anne Boleyn lost her head over the matter. 1875, the first Kentucky Derby was run. The winner, Aristides. There's a good trivia contest question to tuck away. In 1954, the Supreme Court issued its landmark Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka ruling, which declared racially segregated public schools to be inherently unequal. Reversing, I think it was Plessy versus Ferguson, which goes to show the Supreme Court is not infallible. We'll talk about that more here in just a minute. Born on this day, 1955, Bill Paxton, American actor and director. He's kind of a quirky Bill. Yeah, I loved him in, what was it? Was it in Aliens 2? It's just great, man. We're all going to die. He's been in some dark films. A Simple Plan. Ooh. Or Frailty, if you've ever seen that one. Wow. Much better than Twister, in my opinion. 1956, born on this day. A comedic genius, Bob Saget. Well, not really. But also a boxing genius, Sugar Ray Leonard. And Danny Manning, 50 years old today. I still remember 1988, his magical run through the NCAA tournament with the Kansas Jayhawks. And on this day in 1970, Hank Aaron became the ninth player to get 3,000 hits. Of course, there have been players since then. Maybe about nine more. I'm not sure. But Hank Aaron, oftentimes forgotten, he was not just a power hitter. Pretty impressive, not only 755 home runs, but over 3,000 hits. And on this day in 1973, the Watergate scandal began to have televised hearings in the United States Senate. Speaking of the federal government, the news broke yesterday about the Little Sisters of the Poor case, who were appearing before the Supreme Court of the United States, yet another case dealing with religious liberty issues related to the contraception mandate in the Health and Human Services, in the Health and Human Services Department, related to the Affordable Care Act, popularly known as Obamacare. And according to this story from the National Catholic Register, the Supreme Court sends the Little Sisters case back to the lower courts. As it says, in a unanimous May 16th decision, the U.S. Supreme Court has sent back to the lower courts a challenge to the federal contraception mandate raised by the Little Sisters of the Poor. The lawsuit involves the Department of Health and Human Services contraception mandate, which requires employers to provide contraception and drugs that can produce abortions in employee health plans. While the government has offered an exemption to many corporations, it has no exemption for the Little Sisters of the Poor, who help run houses to care for the elderly poor. The Hill reported that the Supreme Court on Monday gave the Obama administration a final chance to work out a compromise with religious groups opposed to the birth control mandate, adding that the justices unanimously instructed both parties to find a tweak to the contraceptive mandate to eliminate any faith-based concerns while still ensuring that the affected women receive contraceptive coverage seamlessly. Now, it's an interesting decision because it's really not a decision. It's sort of kicking the can down the road, sending the case back to the lower courts with the belief, obviously, that there can be some sort of mutually agreeable compromise worked out so that the federal government can get what it wants and the Little Sisters of the Poor can preserve their own particular religious integrity. Now, there are different spins being done on the case. There are those who support the government and oppose the Little Sisters, which is always, I think, a strange fight to be in. I mean, do you really want to be taking the Little Sisters of the Poor to court, whose whole ministry revolves around caring for the most vulnerable, seniors and others who are suffering? But logic never seems to prevail in the political world. Anyway, there you have those who oppose the Little Sisters and their cause, saying that this is a win of sorts because it makes clear that women are going to get their contraceptive coverage. Meanwhile, those who represent the Little Sisters of the Poor and others are calling it a win for the Little Sisters of the Poor, particularly the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. I need to see if I can get somebody from the Beckett Fund on the program to talk about this. We've had them on before. An excellent organization, named after St. Thomas Becket, dedicated to preserving that first freedom mentioned in the First Amendment, the freedom of the free exercise of religion, not simply the freedom to believe in one's own private conscience. Anyway, this was the Beckett Fund statement. We are very encouraged by the court's decision, which is an important win for the Little Sisters. The court has recognized that the government changed its position. It is crucial that the justices unanimously order the government not to impose these fines and indicated that the government doesn't need any notice to figure out what should now be obvious. The Little Sisters respectfully object, he continued. As I said, at the same time, you've got those on the other side who are arguing that this is actually a victory of sorts for the contraceptive mandate. So, you know, not surprising, of course, that you'd have two different spins or takes on the situation. What appears obvious is that the current makeup of the Supreme Court, without now the late Justice Antonin Scalia, probably found itself hopelessly divided and had no other option than to kick the can down the road. Lyle Denniston with SCOTUSblog.com. This was his analysis. And even though I think SCOTUSblog does a good job, and we've had Amy Howe from that website on before, she's very, very good. They do their very best to keep their own personal opinions under wraps. I think I've seen enough of Lyle Denniston's work to recognize that he sort of tilts, I guess you could say, to the left on this issue. But he writes in his analysis, without settling any legal issues surrounding the Affordable Care Act's birth control mandate, the Supreme Court on Monday nevertheless cleared the way for the government to promptly provide no-cost access to contraceptive for employees and students of nonprofit religious hospitals, charities, and colleges, while barring any penalties on those institutions for failing to provide that access themselves. The court largely shifted to the six federal appeals courts, gave them the task of ruling on the mandate's legality, the task the court had agreed last November to take on itself in seven of its cases. So, as I said, you know, the Little Sisters' objection was, is not only, of course, they were exempt themselves from providing the contraceptives, but they had to allow the government access basically to their own infrastructure, their own insurance infrastructure, in order to ensure that the women received the contraception. And according to the Little Sisters, that would be, and for their point of view, an immoral participation in evil. And they could not in good conscience do it. And the Little Sisters, in the words of Tom Petty, were not going to back down. So, anyway, we'll have to keep an eye on that for sure. But pray for the Little Sisters. Pray for freedom of conscience in this country and free exercise of religion. We'll be back in just a minute with a new hour. This is the Mike Allen Show. Don't go anywhere.